हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
So page 91. Krishna very mercifully breaks down the twin Arjuna trees while tied to the grinding mortar in order to destroy all these faults. It is very interesting to note that this pastime of Krishna is very directly illustrating the predicament of people who are wealthy and aristocratic, but who become involved in licentiousness. It is also interesting to note the remedy applied by Narad Muni, poverty, or in terms which are particularly relevant to ourselves as aspiring devotees, simple living and high thinking. Narad Muni continued, by seeing their faces, one whose body has been pricked by pins can understand the pain of others who are pin pricked. Realizing that this pain is the same for everyone, he does not want others to suffer in this way. But one who has never been pricked by pins cannot understand this pain. Srila Prabhupada comments. There is a saying, the happiness of wealth is enjoyable by a person who has tasted the distress of poverty. There is also another common saying, Vandya ki bhujibhe prasava vedana. A woman who has not given birth to a child cannot understand the pain of childbirth. Unless one comes to the platform of actual experience, one cannot realize what is pain and what is happiness in this material world. The laws of nature act accordingly. One has killed an animal, one must himself be killed by that same animal. This is called mamsa. Mam means me and sa means he. As I am eating an animal, that animal will have the opportunity to eat me. In every state, therefore, it is ordinarily the custom that if a person commits murder, he is hanged. Yeah. So, someone who's been poverty-stricken, they appreciate wealth. Someone who's not been, like someone born into a rich family, they don't actually appreciate the wealth. They don't actually feel happy because they have wealth. They're only, if they can spend it and use it on different things that they want, then they might feel something, but it's not that they feel that comfort of having that wealth. In his Paramatma Sandarbha, Anucheda 93, Srila Jiva Goswami writes, there are two types of endeavor. Endeavoring for one's own happiness and endeavoring to make others happy. In the first of these two kinds of endeavors, mercy is not possible. For in that situation, a person thinks only of his own benefit, for he does not care about the benefit of others. In the second of these kinds of endeavor, one feels happy in others' happiness and unhappy in others' suffering. In that situation, one will desire that others may be happy. However, a person who has never been touched by the sufferings that others feel cannot experience the emotion of compassion. This is described in the words of Srimad Bhagavatam 10.10.14. Narad Muni continued, a poverty-stricken man must automatically undergo austerities and penances because he does not have the wealth to possess anything. Thus his false prestige is vanquished. Always in need of food, shelter, and clothing, he must be satisfied with what is obtained by the mercy of providence. Undergoing such compulsory austerities, it is good for him, because this purifies him and completely frees him from false ego. Srila Prabhupada comments. A saintly person voluntarily accepts the state of poverty just to become free from material false prestige. Right? So this poverty doesn't mean you have nothing. It means you only have how much you need. So the same simple living, high thinking is the same principle. Right? Because we will say, wealth means you have more than what you require. Right? So poverty means you have just what you require. Right? So you don't want to have less than what you require, but you don't want to have more. Many great kings left their princely standard of living and went to the forest to practice austerity according to Vedic culture, just to become purified. But if one who cannot voluntarily accept such austerity is put into a situation of poverty, he automatically must practice austerity. Austerity is good for everyone because it frees one from material conditions. Therefore, if one is very much proud of his material position, putting him into poverty is the best way to rectify his foolishness. Daridya dosho guna rashi nashi. When a person is poverty stricken, naturally his pride, false pride in aristocracy, wealth, education, and beauty is smashed. Thus corrected, he is in the right position for liberation. Narad Muni continued, always hungry, longing for sufficient food, a poverty-stricken man gradually becomes weaker and weaker. Having no extra potency, his senses are automatically pacified. A poverty-stricken man, therefore, is unable to perform harmful, envious activities. In other words, such a man automatically gains the results of the austerities and penances adopted voluntarily by saintly persons. So, they're going through this forced by the modes of nature, but they get the same benefit as the saintly person who voluntarily follows that. Difference being, of course, that the saintly person, because he's voluntarily done that, that's there in the consciousness, while the other one just develops those good qualities. But because it wasn't in his consciousness, to properly follow them, unless he gets good association, he may not continue that if things get better. Srila Prabhupada comments, according to the opinion of experienced medical practitioners, diabetes is a result of voracious eating, and tuberculosis is a disease of under-eating. Yes. We should desire neither to be diabetic nor to be tubercular. Yavad artha prayojanam. We should eat frugally and keep the body fit for advancing in Krishna consciousness. Right? So we don't eat more than required, we don't eat less than required. Right? So that's the...
Maharaj, yes. You said frugally means without sense gratification, no?
Well, it means, how are you defining sense gratification? It means it's like, tastes terrible or something? So it tastes like Chinese medicine. Then that's eating frugally. No? Any Chinese medicine I've had, it has to taste bad. If it doesn't taste bad, it's not good medicine.
Can I say that good medicine must be bitter?
Yes, bitter. That's the thing. Yeah, because it's always the liver, everything, you know. So So therefore you don't eat less, because if you eat less, then you get tuberculosis. Right? The tuberculosis means that there's just the body is so undernourished that these things can come up. Right? You know, it's just like what was it? Vichitravirya. He was so busy with his two wives that he wasn't eating regularly and wasn't taking care of himself, so his whole system became so depleted, then he got tuberculosis. And then diabetes, you're eating too much, therefore because of that there's too much energy in the system, so therefore then you get that problem. Okay. So then frugally just means how much is necessary. The senses, if they're engaged in Krishna's service, we don't call it sense gratification. If you take prasad and the prasad tastes nice, we don't call it sense gratification. Right? Some may interpret it that way, that if you like anything that you eat or do or anything, then that's sense gratification. Therefore, in austerity, you should eat the things you don't like, do services you don't like, hang out with people you don't like. That will be true you know, unalloyed devotional service. Otherwise, it's just sense gratification. But this is not position as, you know, you can do this and one definitely will make some advancement, but that's not what's recommended in the Shastras. Okay? So therefore, it means it's not sense gratification. It means, yes, you avoid sense gratification by everything being offered to Krishna, by eating on a regular basis, by eating only how much is necessary. Then that is the meaning of frugal. We generally take it frugal means less than necessary. No, frugal means that you think about it. You're frugal and you're spending. You only spend what you need to spend. It doesn't mean you don't spend money. You know, you might buy something for hundreds of dollars, but you're only buying that. You're not buying something more. You know, so that's frugal. You get value for money. You know, you're careful. You don't waste. So the same way is that you don't eat more than is required. You don't eat what's, you know, not required. You know, you always like that. Does that make sense? So the engagement of the senses in Krishna's service is not a problem. But the overeating, then that's just by the sensual aspect. So it's not, you don't need, you're taking prasad to maintain the body. And it purifies, but then to eat more, then that's not important, you know. Probably mentioned, I think, the first 6 months of being a brahmachari, then you eat however much you want, because that's all you've got. So, you know, that's when you do your one bucket of halava. And then after 6 months or like that, then you cut it down and you know, how you say, deal more appropriately. You don't eat too much. You just stick to your half a bucket of halava. Don't eat more than that. You know, so. It's a natural process. It means it's either you do it voluntarily or it will happen anyway. So might as well get the benefit, you know.
He once mentioned that because we come from a certain background, for us, sense gratification is bad and we must go on the middle of the street and flog ourselves.
Yes.
So we are actually not Krishna conscious, we are Krishna conscious.
Yes. Yes, it's just this idea that if the senses are engaged, it's bad. No, it's senses being engaged, not connected to Krishna, is bad. Spiritual world, everyone's engaging the senses, but it's always connected to Krishna. So material means we're engaging the senses, not connected to Krishna. So that's the difference. That's what we're trying to adjust. Yeah, and keep the body fit for advancing Krishna consciousness. So keeping the body fit means it's enough that the body is healthy, you can do service, but at the same time it's fit for advancing means it's not too much so that one, therefore, there's so much, how you say, what was the term Papa used? Oh, it was the page before that. His senses are not turbulent, right? So if you eat too much, the senses become turbulent. So you eat how much, the senses don't become turbulent, and the body is fit for service. That you could say, that's the frugal that Prabhupada's talking about. The real business of human life is to keep oneself fit for advancement in spiritual realization. Human life is not meant for making the senses unnecessarily strong, right? So strong enough to do service, not beyond that. It's not meant for making the senses unnecessarily strong so that one suffers from disease and one increases in an envious fighting spirit. Yeah, so if the senses are too strong, you get sick. If they're not strong enough, you get sick. If they're too strong, you get sick. So. In this age of Kali, however, human civilization is so misled that people are unnecessarily increasing in economic development. And as a result, they are opening more and more slaughterhouses, liquor shops, and brothels. In this way, the whole civilization is being spoiled. Narad Muni continued, saintly persons may freely associate with those who are poverty-stricken, but not with those who are rich. A poverty-stricken man, by association with saintly persons, very soon becomes uninterested in material desires, and the dirty things within the core of his heart are cleansed away. But because he's getting the same benefit by that forced austerity as the saintly person is getting from his voluntary austerity. Right? It means the qualities of the senses being controlled, right? And then not having so much interest in these things, because they're not available. Now, if he gets those things, or gets to associate with those who are more materialistic, he'll be inclined that way. But if he gets the association of saintly persons, then he'll see is that the material world isn't really worth it at all, because he can actually see that point of birth, death, old age, and disease. Well, the others, they always try to avoid it. The four is like you could talk any topic. You know, I remember before in the 70s like that, you could talk any, even in the 80s, any topic with the Karmis, the Western Karmis, except death. They didn't want to talk about death. Mm-hmm. Now I'm sure that you can add to it old age. Birth, disease, yeah, they understand that. Well, you know, but, you know, that these other two. But. So that's the point, is that the saintly person can move with these poor persons and they will be able to appreciate. Well, the wealthy person, if he's proud, then he'll have a problem. Srila Prabhupada comments. It is said, Mahad Vichalanam Narinam Grihinam Dina Chaitasam. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.8.4. The only business of a saintly person or sannyasi, a person in the renounced order, is to preach Krishna consciousness. Sadhus, saintly persons, want to preach to both the poor and the rich, but the poor take more advantage of the sadhus' preaching than the rich do. A poor man receives sadhus very quickly, offers him obeisances, and tries to take advantage of the presence, whereas a rich man keeps a big greyhound dog at his door so that no one can enter his house. He posts a sign saying, "Beware of dog," and avoids the association of saintly persons. Whereas a poor man keeps his door open for them and thus benefits by their association more than a rich man does. Because Narad Muni, in his previous life, was the poverty-stricken son of a maidservant, he got the association of saintly persons and later became the exalted Narad Muni. This was his actual experience. Therefore, he is now comparing the position of a poor man with that of a rich man. Satam prasangan mama virya samvido bhavanti hrid karna rasayana katha taj joshanad ashva pavarga vartmani shraddha ratir bhaktir anukramishyati. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.25.25. One gets the advantage of association with saintly persons. By their instructions, one becomes more and more purified of material desires. Krishna bahirmukha hoy bhoga vanshakare nikatasta maya tare japitya dhare prema vivarta. Material life means that one forgets Krishna and that one increases in one's desires for sense gratification. But if one receives the advantage of instructions from saintly persons and forgets the importance of material desires, one is automatically purified. Cheto darpana marjanam bhava mahadavagni nirvapanam. Unless the core of a materialistic person's heart is purified, he cannot get rid of the pangs of bhava mahadavagni, the blazing fire of material existence. It's interesting. It means always in Prabhupada's purports, he'll quote the scriptures. But much of the time in one, you know, many times it's just referring to the point that's being made there, or one verse will be quoted. But as we notice, as we got into this 10th canto, there'll be many, many, many quotes in one verse, right? Because these have already been explained so nicely before, now he just has to say that one part and we understand what is the significance, so you can take it into a deeper understanding, a broader understanding. So, yes?
This point of Sangha, and it's mentioned specifically in that verse, that is Prasanga, and apparently there are different levels of Sangha, and obviously one is very formal, and one is informal. So the prasanga seems like it's more intimate association.
Mm.
So the problem might be for many is that we have plenty of formal association. But informal association, it's not as much as available, because even if we take, you know, regular Bhagavatam class, it's quite formal. But then for informal, how do we get that?
Well, there is a modern solution.
Modern?
Yes. That, oh no, that's another thing. That's a, that you know, that's a transcendental solution going into the internet. But, you know, but what we're meaning here is that you said you take the formal situation and you don't consider it so important, so that lowers it down to a more common situation. So in that way, then you seemingly get the taste of prasanga.
And it just becomes social. It's not sangha as such.
So what kind of solution are you looking for?
I don't know.
I mean, you're wanting a spiritual solution?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, then in that case, then one should avoid that one that we just mentioned. Because that means then the good association you could have, you don't even take advantage of. Because there's so many more things that are important, so the devotional activities are something we do in the background, and in the foreground is then our you know, occupation. You know, like now modern society is career-driven, like that. So that's the real thing, and doing things at home, with people, with family, that's all, you know, that's not considered very important. Now, underlying that, what's not appreciated by such individuals is they actually don't have the qualifications to function in a personal level with, you know, family and relatives and friends. So it's actually easier for them to not act properly and then give the excuse that it's career. And because the career, you can obviously see, I do this, I get results, because it's not so personal. So I don't have to actually put in any effort to understand another person's mentality, their mood, and then deal with it appropriately. And even if I do, all the only result I get is an emotional experience. And so then if I don't value that, then I will take it that, you know, making money, having things, that's the real sign of advancement. Does that make sense? So this same problem that creates this, you know, modern prasanga, then is also the problem, is the one that creates that we actually don't know how to deal with people. So you can take advantage of this sangha if you actually know how to deal. So by the Vaishnava etiquette and these things, then that's there. So then Rupa Goswami gives that example, dadati pratigrinati guhya makyati pichati bhunkte bhojanate. These kind of things. This is how then those who you find have a similar nature, more advanced, then you try to spend some time with them. Right? It means, you know, the door is open, you know, like this. While we see the rich man, he's so busy and everybody's trying to get his money that he closes the door to everyone, including the saintly person, because he thinks, you know, I'm doing everything for money, and so that's the topmost thing. So the saintly person is there, that's just his occupation, how he gets money. So him coming to see me, there must be something about it, so they're not interested. So one has to the only way to actually take advantage is by following the tradition. And therefore, opportunities to do those things, spend time together and everything like that. So that means one has to be willing to put an effort in that area. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Then it has an advantage. But otherwise, then one, due to not seeing the value of association, you don't make the endeavor. So prasanga will only happen when you actually value it. And even the sangha will only happen when you value it. Otherwise, you'll take the sangha and say it's just, you know, more common, and so therefore you'll not take it very seriously. In other words, your work on Facebook is so much more important than Bhagavatam class. You know? Is that... Yeah.
I understand the value of friendship, like with the other devotees on the same level, but they are in our private life, as a grahastha, then I would consider like, I mean, are there any difference between sitting here and then like the goal of their house? Is it like, for me it is like to invite like spiritually much more advanced devotees over to the house and bless it and have this association in the same way. Like, I am wondering what is the difference between the formal and the informal.
Oh, here what he's meaning is more formal, meaning is a generic kind of thing, so there's not much specific kind of interaction. Where then the other prasanga he's meaning is that you're taking advantage of that association, really trying to apply it in your life and interacting. So it's not that it may not have that formal element, but it has it's more deep. That's the, you know? Yeah, that's what it is. But generally what I was saying is, you know, just kind of, you know, light tone, is that the modern, then they'll just take it that it's more ordinary, you know, because like dealing with family and friends is more deep than dealing with business associates. But that's not taken as an important thing, because what do you gain there? Just some emotional this and that you have to keep dealing with, and what are you getting? Well, if I deal with business associates, then I make deals, I'm in networking, I make profit, I can buy that car, I can buy that house, I can do all those things. So it's seemingly that it's so much more important. But the whole point is if you have all this house, car, and everything, and you don't have people to share that with, then what's the reality? Therefore, then the career or lifestyle, the career orientation becomes actually a lifestyle. So now they start spending time with career-oriented people. And so they do the same thing they should be doing with family, but with these people. Right? Because it won't get too sentimental, because it gets in the way of business. So then it seems easier. So you go out to dinner with them, go out for drinks, go play golf with them, do all these kinds of things that you would do. You know, maybe go on vacation, you know, like that. But it has that element. If you go to vacation, you know, with the boss and his wife, you know, then that kind of thing has its limits how far you can take, because he is the boss. It's not that now you're just friends that are hanging out. No, you won't come down to actually the ashram level. You just have flavors of it. You know, so there's a flavor of that. But it's not that you're willing to put in the time. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like you take the potatoes, you cut them all evenly, you hand layer them into the pan, you know, you put in all the things like this, you know, one layer after another. Because it's done like that, then you have to bake it very slowly, and everything like that, you'll get a particular result. But people want that kind of thing, but without that endeavor. So what do? You take all the potatoes, you know, they're cut like that, you throw them into the pan that you put into the oven, you put on the fire. You know, since when do you put baking pans on the fire? But that's what you do. And then you put some water in there and just move them around until they start boiling, and that when they get partly cooked and everything's hot, you stick it in the oven, and in 30 minutes you got what you're looking for. But it's not exactly the same, because someone who actually knows, then you can tell the difference. You know what I'm saying? But it's just, we want quick fixes for everything. Does that make sense? So we want this idea that I'm going to put in a little bit and get immense amounts. You know, it's just like the mini market, the festival. What's the profit ratio? Right? Standard is 1,000%. Karmis don't work at that unless they're doing like perfumes or, you know, how you say, rotted and aged potato juice, you know, and stuff like that. Then they can do, you know, very strange, rare fishes' eggs. You know, then you might do stuff like that. But otherwise, the devotees, it's an ordinary thing, 1,000%. So it's just, we just want, because it's all for Krishna, but we forget is who you're taking the money from, people who are also using it for Krishna. Right? You know, so we kind of, you know, forget these things. So we don't create a community. We don't create those things. We think it's all about the service and all that, and relationships are maya, because any relationship we've had before being a devotee was maya, literally. You know, and so then we don't know how, because of the impersonal background, we don't know how to actually be personal and just be comfortable sitting around, you know, talking. And does that make sense? So then that becomes a problem. So as we become purified, it becomes easier. You know, as you become older, you can't move around so much. So therefore, if you do have the opportunity that you happen to be sitting in your armchair where the other guy's in his armchair, then you could talk. But much of the time, you can't get up to go to where his armchair is. So then you don't do that. Does that make sense? Yes.
One Swami, he made a sad comment that we're a society of lonely people, and we can actually experience that.
Okay. Because most all those older ones all listened to the Beatles, and that was the song. You know, and now they've added Hare Krishna, so now being lonely isn't as bad as it used to be. Yeah, it's just lonely because they don't know how and don't accept. Prabhupada's given the Vedic culture. That's how you create community. But it's like that's absolutely not going to be accepted because that creates restriction. So the Western idea that restriction creates facility just doesn't compute. Right? Not at the guys in the middle. Poor guys understand. Rich guys understand. The guys in the middle don't understand. So therefore you end up with a lot of lonely people. Because if you follow etiquette and only deal how you're supposed to deal, that means then you, by your restriction, you're taking care of the other person's needs. Because the Vedic idea is, I take care of your needs, you'll take care of mine. The modern idea is, I'll take care of my needs and you'll take care of my needs. Did I leave anything out? So everybody will take care of my needs. So, you know.
Krishna's going to take care of me.
Yeah, Krishna's going to take the universe. Right? The law of attraction. The universe is going to give me whatever I want. Right? So that's the difficulty, is that all the restrictions means that's someone else's facility. But we can't catch that. We think, I'm only going to get because I work for myself. So there has to be that faith and relax. That, no, you have to start. Someone has to start. And so then when you start, that's why you find people that can relate to that. Start with them. Right? Because you're lonely. Lonely doesn't mean that you don't have relationships with everybody, therefore you're lonely. Lonely means you don't have anyone else other than yourself, therefore you're lonely. So then a few devotees that is nice, it's good. Like, was it Narottam Das Thakur, that Ramachandra?
Sangamage,
Narottam Das. Like that, he wanted that association. So for him, that was the good association. So we see is that that's all that takes. Is that a few persons that we have a nice reciprocation with, that's good enough. If we can expand more, great. And when we're with devotees and we deal nicely and everything like that. But it has to be devotion-based rather than occupation-based. Because when it's occupation-based, that's where you know, get people you don't like. Right? Because the Western mentality is always a shortage. There can only be one guy totally in charge, right? Well, the Vedic is everybody can have a position in which they're doing something because it's all part of a machine. Is that what I think? So everybody can work together. Right.
Once you mentioned that you are in Mayapur, you'll be lucky if you find one person who has one friend.
Yeah. Like that. But that's anywhere. That's anywhere. But that's good. Okay.
continue?
Narad Muni continued, saintly persons, sadhus, think of Krishna 24 hours a day. They have no other interest. Why should people neglect the association of such exalted spiritual personalities and try to associate with materialists taking shelter of non-devotees, most of whom are proud and rich? Srila Prabhupada comments. A sadhu is one who is engaged in devotional service to the Lord without deviation. Bhajate mam ananyabhak. Titikshava karunika surida sarvadehinam. Ajata satravah santa sadhava sadhu bhushanaha. The symptoms of a sadhu are that he is tolerant, merciful, and friendly to all living entities. He has no enemies. He is peaceful. Right. So if you're tolerant, then you don't get upset. So therefore you can be kind, merciful, you can be kind. Because right. Otherwise then lack of tolerance is that's where one gets angry, that's where you get upset. Okay. He has no enemies. He's peaceful. He abides by the scriptures. Right? Because if you don't have enemies, so if you're tolerant, then you can have all these things. Then there's no enemies. Because an enemy is someone you're not tolerant of. That's the basic, how you define an enemy. Right? So then you're peaceful. Then you abide by the scripture, because you can do everything by the scripture, because there's nothing else that you're trying to gain. And all his characteristics are sublime. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:25-21. A sadhu is surida sarvadehinam, the friend of everyone. Why then should the rich, instead of associating with sadhus, waste their valuable time and associate with other rich men who are averse to spiritual life? Right, because they'll make a club, hang out at their club, and all they do is increase each other's false ego. Because that's the whole point. It's what's the point of being at a rich club unless you can prove that you are richer than everybody else? Or, if you're not richer than everybody else, how by associating with these rich guys you can become rich? So it's not like they're improving the quality of their life. Maybe associate with those they can relate to, and that they can relax. Okay, nice. But without the aspect of the sadhu sangha, then it doesn't really give any benefit. Both the poor man and the rich man can take advantage of the Krishna consciousness movement. And here it is advised that everyone do so. Right? So you can see is the poor man, he has a good attitude, though he doesn't have the piety. Right? But because of the good attitude, he's able to see it properly, and then by practicing Krishna consciousness, all that piety is gained. The rich man has the piety, but he has the wrong attitude. Therefore, he can't take advantage. There is no profit in avoiding the association of the members of the Krishna consciousness movement. Narottam Das Thakur has said, Satsanga chari kainu asate vilas te karane lagya je karma banta fansha. Fansh. Oh, because it's If we give up the association of sadhus, saintly persons engaged in Krishna consciousness, and associate with persons seeking sense gratification and accumulating wealth for this purpose, our life is spoiled. Right? The word asat refers to an avaishnava, one who is not a devotee of Krishna, and sat refers to Vaishnava, Krishna's devotee. One should always seek the association of Vaishnavas and not spoil one's life by mixing with avaishnavas. Right? So that's the whole point. Even if you find, okay, the karmis have better qualities in your perspective, but that doesn't mean that they're fit for association, because underneath that, then is all bad qualities. The example is given of a snake, a poisonous snake with a jewel on its head. It looks very attractive, but it's poison. It will kill you. Or a very sharp sword in a jeweled case. It looks very nice, but it can kill you. So that's the whole point, is that it may seem pleasant on the emotional platform, but as far as devotional goes, one will lose one's position. because their only purpose of being nice is for sense gratification. Right? And so if devotees take up Krishna consciousness, they understand sense gratification is not important, so therefore the only reason they were following any etiquette was for sense gratification, then the mistake they'll make is giving up etiquette. You know, because we're just being practical, just doing Krishna's service. But the point is, because it's Krishna's service, then it's proper association. Right? And if we're in an inconvenient state, that happens. That will happen if you're with the karmis. Right? Is it so great with the karmis? Otherwise, it would be so fabulous. There'd be so many nice stories, nice this and that, and but they're rare. Right? It's always, you know, they say, news of fresh disasters. Right?
The difficulty is that Swarup Lakshana is one, is covered by many Tathastha Lakshanas.
Yes.
So actually what happens is that we build our relationship based on many Tathastha Lakshanas, but we forget about Swarup Lakshana.
Yes.
Because it's only one thing, and you know.
Yes.
So then, and then the conditioning gets in and it spoils the relationship.
Yes. But if you remember that Swarup aspect, then the Tathastha Lakshanas are only used as a medium to express the relationship and be involved in service to Krishna. And depending upon the individual, then they may have certain lakshanas that are there. That's how you choose who you're closer with or in what activities. Like you may be close with one devotee in one activity, another devotee in something else, and you wouldn't mix them. Like you may do some kind of service with one devotee, you might take prasad with another devotee, you might chant with another one, but you don't mix them. Because the lakshanas that stand out during other services may not be something that you can appreciate. So that's how you choose that prasanga. Okay. So, one always has to see the underlying. Because Lord Chaitanya says someone's a devotee if they've chanted the holy name once. Just means they may not be very advanced, but they're a devotee. So therefore they're dealt with differently. Right? And then the Madhyamadhikari, then they're fixed in their service, and that, and the Uttamadhikari, and something. But that's just it. They've chanted once. Then Lord Chaitanya accepts them, and that's all, you know, defined in the Madhya Lila. Then that's how he defines a devotee. So if we take that, then we kind of have to deal with everyone properly. Because they're all devotees. So any weakness just means the weakness in devotional service, just the obstacle that's in one's advancement. But the devotional, the underlying element of being a devotee, that has to be appreciated. Mm-hmm. So it has to be seen as these weaknesses are only in relationship to how to improve the devotional service. And for yourself, you may contemplate it so you see it and apply it in your own life, but to explain it, unless they're interested or you have a position to have that influence or can have, then why get involved? Does that make sense? Yeah.
So if the definition of devotee is somebody who has chanted the holy name once and have received it in parampara, so what's the case for a person who receives the holy name like that but doesn't accept the transcendental nature of the Lord? Does he get the benefit?
There'll be some, but you know, it means that you have to have that slightly devotional attitude. So the point is they've just done the littlest service, but they have that kind of, you know, proper attitude, then it's considered in a different capacity. Okay. You know, if they're opposed and going against it, that's going to be a problem.
It's an interesting episode in CC, as you mentioned. Then the residents of Kurunagram, they came to Mahaprabhu, and first year he said like that. The next year he said, devotee is one who always chants. Mm-hmm. And the third time he said, if you see somebody and then your desire to chant is, you know, the reason in your heart, then he's a devotee. So we get, you know, three definitions.
Yes. But one is neophyte, one's madhyama, one's uttama. So the neophyte has chanted or has done some service and has that faith. They may not be always engaged in all that. The madhyama means he's always engaged, so he's always chanting. And then the uttama, done like you said. Just by seeing, you become inspired and you want to take part. Okay. So these are, you know, so there's devotee, more devotee, most devotee. Like that. But they're all devotees. So, but the standard platform of dealing will be that of the madhyama. Because then you make the distinctions, you deal with all the social things, you deal with everything that's there, you know, as far as etiquette goes, so you can actually have a fuller pastime. The neophytes don't necessarily appreciate that, so therefore, why should I deal with him because of this? You know? And whether your perception of that thing was correct or not, then that's another thing, but it doesn't matter to you because that's the way you see it. And the uttama, everyone's seen the same, so you don't make any distinction. You deal nicely with everybody, but you won't be able to... That aspect of engaging all of their conditionings and this and that, you'll generally finesse that. You'll just go straight through to the soul and that aspect. So gaining that, that's a great thing, but it's through the association of those who are acting as madhyamas that you get that understanding. Because the Paramahamsas, they don't worry about these distinctions. As you see, sometimes they're brought up. You know, someone either moves into that or someone already is that when it's being discussed. And so they don't care for all the fine detail. But because they follow the etiquette of always being humble, tolerant, respecting others, not looking for respect for themselves, they're always absorbed in the Lord. Therefore, that etiquette can work anywhere. Because you'll always deal nicely. You're not respecting the person because of his wealth or his power or his fame or beauty or knowledge or renunciation. You're just respecting them because they're the soul, the servant of the Lord. So you're dealing with them on that platform which those opulences are supposed to be engaged for. So you've come to the point of already engaged. So you just surpass all that and just deal with the essence. That's why you see a Paramahamsa can always deal with everybody nicely. Does that make sense? So Diogenes wouldn't be a Paramahamsa. You know? Might be a Hamsa, but not a Paramahamsa. Because he has that harshness from that renunciation. Right? So then but the madhyama means then he can engage everyone according to their position. So the uttama can inspire them. I'm talking about an uttama who's acting as an uttama. So he can inspire them, but then to get direction how to apply that inspiration in their life, they'll have to get that from someone who's acting as a madhyama. Because they'll explain how to engage the indirect and indirect activities in your life. The uttama will simply say, you always remember Krishna, everything's Krishna, connect everything to Krishna, which is what you're doing. That's the principle. But to get the secondary aspects, then the others have to explain how to use that. Does that make sense? So that's why the madhyama platform is the common platform for those within the preaching mission. So if you're a neophyte, still you take the position and act like a madhyama. If you're an uttama, you take the position and act like a madhyama. But your realization, there'll be three levels of realization. And so therefore, then, you know, you'll be effective, but then how much you'll be effective, that's another thing. You know, like, we can maybe keep a temple from going under over 10 years, but Prabhupada, you know, produced 108 temples from nothing in the same amount of time. Is that, you know, so that's the difference in potency. So that's the uttama acting as a madhyama. So everybody wants to take part. Is that what it says?
No? There's a doubt.
There's a doubt. Okay. What's this doubt?
Doubt is that Srila Prabhupada, he created that sangha of madhyamas, but then somehow, over the years, it dissolved. It's not...
So you're saying bureaucrat and madhyama is not synonymous?
No.
Wow.
I didn't say that.
That's a revelation. Okay. Yes. See, the thing is it's... Remember we were discussing... Was it this morning? Yeah, it was this morning. It was sometime. Seeing that Krishna consciousness is without time, no past, present, or future. At some point we were discussing. So, the point is that we're serving the spiritual master. So actually it's his service. So, if we're committed to that service fully, then whether one's a neophyte, a madhyama, or an uttama, what's going to be the effect of performing that service and others coming in contact with that? It'll be the same. So therefore, people will be inspired to chant the holy name. Because they are so committed to the mission of the acharya. Therefore, then, others seeing that, they see the acharya. And so then everybody is inspiring. You understand? So that's why one has to stay close. You know, that's why, was it? Also, no, I think Narottam Das Thakur, that one's just running behind the spiritual master saying Krishna, Krishna.
Yes.
Oh, that's Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Okay, just running behind. There's another one where he just, Prabhupada says you just hold on to his dhoti, you know, just like you see kids, you know, they, you know, when they're around, kind of around knee high, you know, they stand behind, hold on to the cloth, you know, and look, you know, like that. So that's how we're supposed to view the world, is from that perspective. So that's the thing, if that's there, then it all works. So it's just a matter of, and it's not a matter of time. Right? It's not that, oh, to do that will take so much time. No, it can be done in a moment, because Krishna consciousness is the natural position of the soul. It's how the whole universe is controlled and regulated. That's the position. It's not anything else. So the whole point is we may think the karmis are in control, but actually who's in control? They're all devotees. All the demigods are devotees. They're just devotees that are more occupationally minded than their sadhana. So that's how they end up as demigods. But all the 33 million that control everything, blinking your eye and, you know, everything like that, they're all devotees. You know? So everyone up. Brahma is a devotee. Shiva is they're all devotees. You know? Or at least seriously appreciate the Lord's position, and so therefore then they follow and do that. So we're thinking is that, no, the modern world is run by all these other material. No, it's not. Because that guy and why he drinks his coffee and doesn't choke is because the demigod allows him to swallow. But when his time has come, he chokes. You know? Okay. So the whole point is the universe is run according to Krishna's principles by devotees. And so then if we appreciate that, then we start to see is then the whole thing is actually it's about Krishna, so therefore Krishna's mission. So that's the real thing happening in the universe. Lord Chaitanya's mission is the real thing happening right now. Because he's the avatar for now. And the whole universe appreciates that. So if we take part in that, then we can see those things can be corrected in a moment. Does that make sense? Now, getting down those tatasta lakshanas, that may take generations. But the sarup lakshana, that any living entity can gain immediately. But to be able to function with, you know, patience, tolerance, these things, the individual will develop them as he goes in Krishna consciousness. What you might see is it being part of the just natural cultural thing. That will take time. Does that make sense? So, like that, one has to understand. You know, you have a mission for 10,000 years, the first 50 years, you'd still kind of consider it pioneering. Right? you know, how you say, taking a, let us take a great example of greatness, right? Okay, so, I don't even remember what it was, but sometime in the, I think in the early 1600s, late 1500s, 1500s, then the first, I can't even remember all the names. So sad. A boat came over from England with a bunch of people in it, right? And then they tried to settle, I think, on Plymouth Rock. I don't think they did very well. But some, I think, survived and all that. And then people who are descendants of these people, they're considered the best of the Boston Brahmins. Like that. Mayfair. I think the name of the boat was the Mayfair. So, whatever. So, now, that is in the early 1600s. Now, when did it establish itself as a dynamic country? Right? 160, 70, 80 years later. So, we shouldn't be so worried about 50 years and what's happening and everything. No, it's going to take some time. It'll take generations. Because basically, we're still working on first generation. Because we have second, we have start to have a few third, but who's running the thing? First. So you have to wait until like the third and fourth are running everything. Yeah. Hari Kesha Maharaj made that comment. Someone asked, so, you know, you've been talking about this Varnashram, and I see it's important, so when will we be able to actually establish this so then that's the practice and that's what everybody's doing? He became very thoughtful for some time. And then he said, after the first generations all died off. So in other words, those from the first generation that don't appreciate the Vedic culture, you know, and they're getting in the way until they've gone, then it makes it very difficult.
Yes.
So it's just, that's the thing. Culture takes a long time to establish. But Krishna consciousness, that can be done immediately. Therefore, you see Magrari the hunter, right? So now, he's taken up devotional service. And he's Trinada Pisanichena verse, he follows that. All other varieties of etiquettes, practices, he may not know. But following that, therefore, then he lives a very nice, simple lifestyle. So even though he may not be following Varnashram, he's following that verse. So it's not that he follows something else. He gives up that hunter lifestyle and that. Now they just live by their sadhana and then whatever it is that they're doing. And so then it becomes very nice. So one can progress if one has that. That's the core. In other words, those are the real symptoms of the Sarup Lakshana. And then the others are ornaments that the devotee has that can be engaged nicely in Krishna's service. But unless there's that humility and tolerance and respect for others and not looking for that respect, basically the other qualities can't come. Right? So he sees that patience is there, therefore there's tolerance. If tolerance is there, then you can deal nicely. You can be friendship, mercy, all these things can come. So relationships can develop if we have that. But we're thinking it's some technique on, you know, hey, you know, what, how you speak or what you do or how you write on your, you know, on the internet, that this is what's going to make, you know, everything hold together. That's the glue, but it's not. It's actually good qualities. So therefore, if you focus on Krishna consciousness, good qualities will then come, and then from that, then you can behave. So in the meantime, if we don't have good qualities, we simply try to not apply our bad qualities so that they offend others. Like that. And then we'll progress. That's why then it said, you avoid the ten offenses, then you can, you know, move forward. Even if you don't know the culture, don't know all these things, it still will work. That's the beauty of Krishna consciousness. It's not dependent upon that. But that's its glory, not our glory. Not that it's independent, therefore, oh, we don't have to follow. No, we're dependent. Bhakti is independent. We're dependent, so we have to follow the directions. We can't make up our own system. Does that work at all? Or? Yeah, so it's just a matter of, like you said, We see the value, we apply it in our lives, we associate with those who also value it and try to apply it in their lives, and in that way we go on. Because here it'll become as good as it does, you know? So it'll have its golden era, and then at some point it won't, and everyone will be back to 3 foot tall, and they won't be the gnomes of Zurich. They won't have pintite striped suits, so things will not go so well.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanand.